It's my honor, my privilege to welcome back Dr. Mohammad Raza. Dr. Raza is an interventional cardiologist with Deborah Heart and Lung Center. This is Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, and our topic this half hour is understanding atrial fibrillation and stroke. So we'll be getting all into this in just a moment. Let me just take a minute to let you know a little bit about Dr. Raza's background. A very talented interventional cardiologist, board certified in cardiovascular disease and interventional cardiology. Dr. Raza completed a residency in internal medicine at Drexel University College of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He also completed a fellowship in cardiology and interventional cardiology at Drexel University of Medicine in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Dr. Raza has extensive experience in the field of interventional cardiology with a prime focus on structural heart disease interventions. His special interests include interventional cardiology, of course, valvular heart disease, adult congenital heart disease, complex coronary interventions, and peripheral vascular disease, another topic that we've talked about in the past. He has authored numerous articles in peer-reviewed journals, speaking at several regional and national professional society meetings, and he participates in clinical research projects as well. And again, the topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents is understanding AFib and stroke. Dr. Raza, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Harry. Thank you for the opportunity.
Oh, it is an honor to present you, and you're going to be helping so many people that are listening. What is atrial fibrillation, which a lot of people call AFib?
Yeah. So to understand atrial fibrillation, let's step back to understand heart itself. And as we discussed before in the last show, the heart has four chambers, two top chambers and two bottom chambers, and the blood flows from the top chambers of the heart to the bottom chambers, and the bottom chambers of the heart pump blood into the body. The upper chambers or the top chambers are called atria. And the way it works is there's an electrical signal that travels from the top chambers of the heart to the bottom. So from atria to the bottom chamber, which are called ventricles. So atria and ventricles. And the heart, the way pumping happens is the top chambers or the atria pump first, and then blood goes to the bottom chambers, and then the ventricles or the bottom chambers of the heart pump blood into the body. So how this is all happening is because there's underlying electrical signal that travels from the top chambers to the bottom chambers. So the electrical signals make the top chambers of the heart pump first, and then travels to the bottom chambers, and then the ventricles contract after that. So top and then the bottom. So this electrical signal is key for a organized functioning of the heart. And the electrical signal in the top chamber, when it goes in a chaotic or disorganized fashion and kind of fibrillates in the atria, hence the term comes atrial fibrillation. So the top chambers in atrial fibrillation are fibrillating, there is no organized pumping or contraction, and the bottom, and that electrical signal then also in a disorganized fashion connects to the bottom chambers. So although the bottom chambers of the heart continue to pump and contract, but not in organized fashion, and it could be irregular pumping leading to a typical symptom of atrial fibrillation, that is palpitations or feeling of the irregular heart rhythm. So the top chambers, atria fibrillating and not pumping in organized fashion is really that drives the term atrial fibrillation.
Great explanation and a really good place to start. Dr. Raza, are there different types of AFib?
Yeah, so, you know, atrial fibrillation can be of predominantly two types. One is the paroxysmal, which means it comes and goes. So somebody could be in atrial fibrillation for an hour or two, and then it goes back to the normal sinus rhythm, which we call, and that is called paroxysmal atrial fibrillation, which tend to have less symptoms in general. And then it's the permanent or persistent atrial fibrillation, which means the atrial fibrillation stays longer In persistent, it can still come back, but permanent means it is permanently there, and it's all the times. And, you know, it has its consequences on the function of the heart. So on and off, which is paroxysmal versus persistent, or chronic, which is kind of, long-term effects on the heart.
Do palpitations have any bearing, anything to do with the topic of atrial fibrillation?
Yes, atrial fibrillation one of the common causes of palpitation, especially in senior population, because they tend to have atrial fibrillation more often. So one of the most common symptoms of atrial fibrillation is basically a feeling of the irregularity of the heart function. And people describe it as palpitations. Now, obviously, there have been several other causes of palpitations, but if atrial fibrillation is one of the most common ones in the senior population.
We are visiting with Dr. Raza, interventional cardiologist from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Host error earlier, I meant to mention, in addition to all of his impressive board certifications, that Dr. Raza has two important leadership positions with Deborah Heart and Lung Center: director of the Structural Heart Program and also director of Interventional Cardiology Fellowship Program. Forgive me for failing to mention that, Dr. Raza. But in terms of risk factors, what are the risk factors for AFib?
So the most common risk factor, unfortunately, is age. So if you have a choice, don't get it older. It's unfortunately very common in senior population. Once you are beyond age 60, the prevalence of atrial fibrillation is very high, especially when you are in 80s and 90s, atrial fibrillation becomes a very common disease to deal with. So aging itself, then hypertension, high blood pressure is very commonly associated with atrial fibrillation, obstructive sleep apnea or sleep issues, that is very common. If people are obese, and that leads to sleep apnea, and also in turn leads to high blood pressure, and that is a perfect substrate for atrial fibrillation. Other etiologies are hyperthyroidism, which is the thyroid hormone, if it's functioning, a hyper level, which means above and beyond normal functioning, versus it's under functioning. Both ways, it can lead to atrial fibrillation. These are the most common ones, and then the rare ones, secondary causes from other hormonal abnormalities. But the most common is the age, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, and hyperthyroidism.
The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents Dr. Raza is understanding atrial fibrillation, AFib, and we will get to the second half of the program. We're going to talk about stroke. So we have a lot of important stuff to cover with Dr. Raza. To make an appointment with Deborah Heart and Lung Center, you can call by phone 609-621-2080. I'll repeat, and anybody out there listening, you can email me at any time. I'll be your human Rolodex. Happy to give you all this information at any time. 609-621-2080, or digitally at demanddeborah.org, demanddeborah.org. And there's a hyperlink you can't miss. It's in red. You just cannot miss it, where you can click right on it and you can schedule an appointment digitally as well as by calling the number that I gave, 609-621-2080. Dr. Raza, what are the symptoms of AFib?
So, Harry, the first one you already indicated is the palpitations. So people can feel the heart is racing or it's irregular. People have described that way. Essentially all lumped under palpitations. Then in some patients, this could lead to fatigue and tiredness because of very fast heart rate. Not enough blood is circulating in the body. So fatigue, tiredness, symptoms of shortness of breath is common one, and people can go into heart failure and secondary symptoms, which means swelling of the legs. And unfortunately, one of the not so-called symptom, but more of a biggest complication of atrial fibrillation is stroke, which we're going to talk in a second. So common way of presentations is somewhere starting from palpitations, weakness, tiredness, shortness of breath, and even passing out.
If you have palpitations, Dr. Raza, do you have AFib, or could you have unremarkable palpitations and not have AFib?
Yeah, so palpitations is a very broad, palpitations cover a very broad range of issues with the heart. So, for example, a skip beat is also considered palpitation. People have skip beats, which are very benign, but it continues to, you know, AFA, but atrial fibrillation, which is which requires attention. People can have racing of the heart and palpitation when there is anxiety and stress, and that is completely normal because the heart is trying to pace at a very fast rate in the situation of fear or anxiety and stress. And people can have, pumping and thumping in the chest. That's also described as palpitation. And that's very benign. And there are other arrhythmias, like supraventricular tachycardia, that they can lead to palpitations. There are more dangerous rhythm abnormalities that can also lead to palpitations first. But AFib is unique in some ways that people have, it's not as lethal, fortunately. I say as lethal, it's relatively a benign and very treatable rhythm abnormality. It mostly will cause people to feel they are tired and their heart is racing and they don't have the energy. And that typically tells us this is likely atrial fibrillation. And also in the right patient subset, somebody who is, 80 years old, more than likely the palpitation is going to be atrial fibrillation versus somebody who is 30 years old, the palpitation or etiology of palpitation could be different. And most common one could be just the anxiety and stress and skip beats, which is extra heartbeats, and they are relatively benign.
That's so important, and I thank you for that sidebar, Dr. Raza, on the palpitations. In terms of atrial fibrillation, how is it diagnosed?
It's diagnosed very simply in any office where there is an electrocardiogram can be performed. So in a primary care physician's office or any office, the cardiology office, obviously, but any place where you can basically monitor the heart rhythm, the simplest thing is to perform an electrocardiogram, and that can diagnose it.
Now, depending on your answer, this could be music to your listeners' ears right now. Can atrial fibrillation, AFib, can AFib be prevented?
Yes. For the etiologies we just discussed, for example, high blood pressure, sleep apnea, which is very common, underdiagnosed, undertreated. So obesity, sleep apnea go hand in hand. So if someone has high blood pressure and sleep apnea, obesity, and or thyroid problems, that if we fix them or manage them well, the risk of atrial fibrillation will go down. And I say the risk will go down. We still don't quite understand why some people have atrial fibrillation, others don't. We quite don't understand that. But we have association of different diseases with atrial fibrillation, so I mentioned some of them. If we control them well, the risk will decrease, or at least the management of atrial fibrillation will be easier. To answer your question, yes, it can be prevented in some ways in some patients, but not all.
Can you go in and out of AFib? In other words, can that happen? And also, can you have it at one point and not have it at a later point, or once you have it, you have it? How does that work?
That is excellent, excellent question. So that's going back to when you asked about the types of atrial fibrillation. So in general, people could have paroxysmal, which is on and off atrial fibrillation, and people actually feel it. Some patients will say, I went to the restaurant, I felt, you know, my heart was pacing. And some people who are more into medicine and they kind of are more involved in their health, they can even feel their pulse, and the pulse is, you know, heart is racing, and they can, you know, even say, you know, it was above 100 or so. And so you can be in and out. That's paroxysmal. And the more persistent, permanent is when people stay in it for longer. And underlying in general, when people have persistent or permanent atrial fibrillation, there is underlying structural changes in the heart, and that puts them at high risk to stay in atrial fibrillation for a longer period of time. One of the most common ones is when the top chambers of the heart start to enlarge over time because of high blood pressure, because of atrial fibrillation itself. And when the top chambers of the heart start to enlarge, people tend to be in atrial fibrillation more often or persistently or permanently.
You are doing what you always do. You're putting on a clinic, free clinic, from Dr. Raza, the interventional cardiologist from Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Also, Dr. Raza is the director of the Structural Heart Program and the director of Interventional Cardiology Fellowship Program at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. We only take one break. We're going to take it now. Only one break during Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents. And we're going to shift gears to an extent, but we'll come back in and out back with AFib as well. But the month of May is National Stroke Awareness Month. And when we come back, we'll address the issue of those who have AFib. Are you at risk for stroke? And Dr. Raza will explain, if so, why. Much more in addition to that when we come back. And a reminder to make an appointment with the Deborah Heart and Lung Center to schedule an appointment. Call 609-621-2080, or you can do this digitally as well. Any digital device, from your smartphone to iPads, laptop, desktop, whatever it is, any digital device, just navigate your way to demanddeborah.org. And it will become self-evident how to schedule your appointment. You can't miss it. There'll be a speed button tab, a hyperlink to make the appointment digitally as well. We'll be back with Dr. Raza after this. The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, Dr. Raza, is Understanding AFib and Stroke. We'll be right back. We are talking about AFib, understanding it. And now we're going to get into the issue of stroke during National Stroke Awareness Month, which is the month of May. Dr. Raza, in terms of stroke and people with AFib, if you have AFib, are you at risk for stroke?
Yes, absolutely, Harry. One of the biggest complications of atrial fibrillation is stroke, which, as everybody knows, is absolutely devastating for anyone. It could lead to permanent disability and even death. So atrial fibrillation leads to or has highest risk of stroke, especially now elderly patients. And the risk on an average is about 5% a year. On an average, it can go to 10% in some patients. So, and then getting into, you know, why patients who have atrial fibrillation are at high risk for stroke, you know, getting back to our basic understanding of the heart, the top chambers, the atria. There is, as I explained before, normally there's organized contraction or pumping of the top chambers of the heart, so blood is constantly moving from upper to the lower chambers. And in patients who have AFib, there is no organized contraction, so essentially there's fibrillating of the top chambers of the heart, and that leads to stagnation of blood in the atria. In the left upper chamber of the heart or atrium, there is a structure called left atrial appendage that is essentially a windsock-shaped structure or similar to the, you can say, appendage. You know, there is a blind sac. It's about somewhere between 2 centimeters in size or width-wise, and the depth is approximately 2 to 3 centimeters to give an idea. And that sac or windsock structure has the highest propensity to form clot. So about 90% of the clots that form because of stagnation of the heart in the upper chambers of the heart form inside that appendage or the sac, and the clot can be really large because the blood is not constantly moving. And that clot then at some point could break off, travel along the blood flow from the atria to ventricles, and then can travel to brain, cause a huge stroke. So this is the one of the most dire complication of atrial fibrillation leading to a major stroke.
You did a great job explaining the symptoms of AFib. What are the signs and symptoms of stroke?
So the obviously depends where the clot travels, which part of the brain. As you can see, the brain controls the entire body from speech to movements in the entire body. So depending where that clot travels, and it can travel anywhere, but the common places it can travel to can lead to a stroke that have symptoms similar to symptoms like, unable to speak, so loss of speech, hemiparesis, which is, half of the body is not able to move, loss of function in any part of the body, could be the arm or the hand, loss of feelings or sensation in the body, or in the half of the body or in the part of the body, all are the symptoms of stroke. So lack of speech, sensation, lack of unable to move a part of the body, all fall into stroke.
All right, I'm going to be guilty. I'm going to be nominated for Captain Obvious, but I want to bring this up, that if you all of a sudden you can't count, you can't speak, something is really bad, the earliest Absolutely. Intervention is essential, correct?
Absolutely. So, there's a lot of awareness, and your listeners are fortunate that you are always, as always, ahead of everybody else to educate everybody that awareness is key for everything. Understanding health in general, and then health diseases, AFib, stroke, is crucial to understand to help yourself, also help your family and friends. So if somebody is unable to count, is looking different than the usual state of a normal being, that means there's something not right. That could be stroke. And this is where you kind of pull the trigger, alert the health first responders so that that patient can be treated in timely fashion. Keep in mind, as you eloquently said, you're unable to count, you're unable to speak. That is a very common symptom of stroke.
Thank you so much for that. That can save lives for people listening right now, and that's what the program is all about. The topic this half hour on Deborah Heart and Lung Center Presents, the great Dr. Raza, is understanding AFib and stroke. The month of May is National Stroke Awareness Month, so we're doing, honor to that with today's topic and this great doctor, Dr. Raza. Are strokes caused by AFib, Dr. Raza? The strokes caused by AFib, the complications that come from that, are they more severe than strokes with other underlying causes?
Yes. The simple answer is yes. The strokes in general could be because of the, clots forming in the blood vessels supplying blood to the brain. That's a very common cause, and also the atrial fibrillation. The difference is, when a clot forms in the upper chamber of the heart, in the left atrium, and I described the size of the appendage, that clot can continue to grow. It doesn't have to break off and go right away. It can continue to grow to a larger size, and then when that clot travels, it can block a major blood vessel, so hence causing a more significant loss of function. Or a bigger stroke, loss of function of the bigger part of the brain, versus other stroke, we should never say any stroke is actually non-significant or a smaller stroke in general, because any stroke could be devastating. But these some strokes could be relatively less disabling compared to stroke from atrial fibrillation. So this is why it's so important to understand atrial fibrillation and prevent a stroke from atrial fibrillation, because this could be the most dangerous stroke somebody could have.
To schedule an appointment, you can call 609-621-2080 or go to the website demanddebora.org. We now know, because you do such a great job in communicating important and potentially life-saving information, we know what atrial fibrillation is. We know what types there are. We know the risk factors now. We know the symptoms. We know how you diagnose it. All of this. What are the treatments for AFib?
So there are two components of treatment of atrial fibrillation. One is that we control the rhythm by controlling the rate, which is rate control strategy, we call it, which means that, you know, when the upper chambers of the heart are beating so fast, they are conducting down to the bottom chamber, so the pulse rate could be somewhere from 100 to 200, and that's very abnormal, and patients will feel it. So we want to slow the pulse down to close to normal, which is 70 to 80. So one strategy is to use medications to slow the heart rate, and that will improve symptoms. And that is called rate control strategy. The second is a rhythm control strategy, which means we try to get rid of atrial fibrillation and bring a patient back to the usual rhythm. And there are several ways to do that. There are medications that can do it, and there are certain procedures that are performed to restore normal sinus rhythm or get rid of atrial fibrillation. So it depends on multiple factors. Some patients are eligible or candidates for rhythm control strategy, which means ablate the atrial fibrillation, get back to sinus rhythm. And in some patients, the strategy is just to lower the pulse rate enough the patient can function normally. So that is one component of the treatment of atrial fibrillation. The second component is to prevent stroke, which we just discussed why stroke happened in atrial fibrillation. Also the stroke, as you mentioned, are more dangerous from atrial fibrillation. So how to prevent a stroke from atrial fibrillation? As I mentioned earlier, the blood stagnates in the upper chamber of the heart, in particular the appendage we discussed, and to prevent clot formation, we need to thin the blood. There are medications that can thin the blood and prevent clot formation in that appendage. However, those medications thin the blood in the entire body, because blood is flowing in the entire body. So they thin the blood everywhere, and that thin blood then is at risk to cause bleeding. So essentially, if somebody falls, there could be bleeding in the head, there could be bleeding from the gastrointestinal tract, or there could be a lot of bruising. So those are the common side effects of the blood thinners. There are two kinds of blood thinners. One is traditional, which is warfarin, and then there are other newer agents which we can use. Essentially, the goal is to thin the blood so blood does not clot in that appendage to prevent stroke.
Wild card question. You covered everything on our agenda. We're at the end of the program. Just a wild card question. Exercise and AFib. What are your thoughts about that?
There's no data we know that decreases the risk of atrial fibrillation with exercise. But in general, as I mentioned earlier, by doing exercise, you control your blood pressure, you control your weight, and the sleep apnea is less, and indirectly that will decrease the risk of atrial fibrillation. But I just want to take a second to mention that as we mentioned about the stroke and prevention of stroke with blood thinners, we have devices instead of blood thinners that can we place inside the appendage to close off the appendage by those devices. That are two approved in this country, and they're done in outpatient basis. Essentially, patient comes in the morning, we go in, we place the device inside the appendage. The device looks very similar to an umbrella. You place, and it's almost like covering a pothole. You cover the appendage so then no clot can go in and out. And then patient could be on blood thinner a short period of time, 2 to 3 months, and the rest of their life they don't have to be on blood thinners. And that procedure called left atrial appendage occlusion or closure is crucial in patients who are high risk for bleeding from the blood thinners. As I mentioned, blood thinners do cause risk of bleeding.
A life-changing option that's available. Dr. Raza, I love doing the program with you. This is terrific. To schedule an appointment at Deborah Heart and Lung Center, you can call 609-621-2080 or digitally go to the website demanddeborah.org. Dr. Raza, thank you for a wonderful visit. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Hattie. Always an honor. Take care. Bye-bye.
My honor. Thank you, sir.